It must be exhausting to hold on to all of that anger for all of those years. But then, just like that, you change the script of our lives, and the script that includes others in it. Just like that, we become the people that we are meant to be. And just like that. But it's a hard thing to do. Today, I want for each of us to search our souls, to go down deep, to pull up something special. We all have that capacity to do the very, very hard work of forgiveness. And we can begin it this day. Our reading this morning is remarkable, and thank you, Linda, for sharing in that exercise with me, because just like that, it shows how in an instant, a lifetime of daily practice can lead us to develop one of the most essential human qualities. This fragment from the screenplay rises to the level of a sacred text and a source of inspiration for us because it points us to that spacious life that we are meant to live right now. When we are in balance, the theme for this month, we are just like Philomena Lee, who was played by the actress Judi Dench. We, like Philomena, are able to recognize our own hurt and our own strengths. We're able to recognize the hurt and the strengths of others. We are able to name our own feelings and name the feelings of others. We are able to both mourn and to celebrate. We're able to make a choice that can save our lives. So let me give you a little bit of context to the scene we just heard some words from. Philomena Lee is an Irish woman who 50 years ago had a child out of wedlock. And in the film, we're shuttled back and forth to 1950s Ireland and to 21st century United Kingdom and the United States. We learn how Philomena was sent to a convent, Rose Cray, to hide the fact that she was pregnant, and how while she was there, she was forced to work under impossible conditions. She had a son who she loved, and that son is taken away from her without her having the chance to say goodbye to him. And over the next 50 years, the nuns who are responsible for this convent pretend that they never know what happens to this son, even though they are in contact with him nearly the whole time. And along the way, Philomena finds a reporter named Martin Sixsmith. And together they uncover the truth of Philomena's son, his ultimate destiny. Now, perhaps I'm giving too much away. In this particular scene, we see them after they put all the puzzle pieces together, after they travel to the United States, but realize that the answers that they needed were back in Ireland, back at the convent. And Martin, the reporter, by the time he realizes the deception that had been at work the whole time, he is pissed. Martin is ready for justice or blood or some combination of the two. But Philomena, on the other hand, is almost bizarrely conciliatory, which she is throughout the film. You almost want to scream at her. Be angry, be upset. Look at how they lied to you over 50 years. They're lying to you even now. I can remember while I watched the film just completely identifying with the character Martin, played by Stephen Coogan. And I'm sure some of you who may have seen the film probably felt the same way. We were thinking just like him, those nuns were awful people. Look at what they had done. They lied and lied. They hid everything that they had done. They lied about the son's whereabouts to both son and mother. And when they were presented with the evidence in that moment, in that scene, they didn't have the decency, the mercy, or compassion to, when confronted with that evidence, to admit their past misdeeds. No, instead, they were defiant. They didn't show the least bit of remorse after years of deceiving Philomena and her son. They were unrepentant and justified in their actions, saying at one point that Philomena was merely a victim of her carnal incontinence. Philomena and Martin were right. They were the victims. They had history, they had evidence, they had justice on their side. No one could deny that. But for Philomena, that was not enough, because the only result of such damning evidence is evidence of damnation. And more than that, it's anger, endless, unmitigated, exhausting anger. One must be angry at those that one condemns. To be right in this case would mean to be wrong, because correctness is insufficient. Correct facts could not cope with the magnitude of what Philomena experienced and the challenge that she lived through. Just like that, Philomena chose a different way, not because it was easy, but because she had to. Otherwise, she would be consumed by the same anger that was eating Martin Sixsmith alive before her very eyes. She chose forgiveness to save her life. And by doing so, Philomena has indeed outdone us all. We all have instances where we need to be forgiven, and where we need to forgive others. Some of us might have been raised in a faith tradition where we're taught, or were taught, that forgiveness is something that is already done for us through the satisfaction of God's infinite wrath towards all creation, a wrath that could only be satisfied with an atonement that could only come from a sacrificial death. And it is that kind of myth-making that makes real forgiveness appear to us somehow untenable, somehow supernatural, out there, it's quasi-magical. It involves a tragic suffering on the part of the one who forgives. And those qualities keep forgiveness beyond the realm of mere mortals. But for us as Unitarian Universalists, forgiveness is in the here and now. It is in our lived experience. It is in our spiritual practices that connect us to the life and the love that is beyond ourselves. And it is in our daily practice. It is in the way that we talk to each other, over the counter, over the phone, how we email each other, how we text message each other. It is in our interactions in our homes, and it is in our interactions with our mates in our bedrooms. In his book, Forgiveness is a Choice, the forgiveness scientist, Dr. Robert Enright, says that forgiveness is simply a process Forgiveness is simply a process to free oneself from anger and resentment. It doesn't require that one accept injustice. It does not require that one remain in an abusive situation. Nor does it ask that trust be instantly restored. Especially this, it doesn't require that reconciliation happens, especially if that person, that other person, is unrepentant and not able to admit any fault. One forgives because of one's own sense of peace and well-being, and perhaps from that inward transformation, some good might come outwardly. Forgiveness begins with you. And if you can only remember one thing that I've said today, is that forgiveness frees us from anger and resentment, and we all deserve that kind of freedom. Anger and resentment hold us back from living that life of worth and dignity that we are meant to live. It separates us from our own humanity and the true nature of our connectedness. These are the first and seventh UU principles. It separates us from our own humanity, reflected in that worth and dignity, and it separates us from our connectedness to each other. Even before we arrive at that point in the film where Martin and Philomena are confronting the nuns at the convent, his anger throughout their journey from Ireland to the United States rises to the level where at times it's even difficult for him to be in the same room with Philomena. That's how angry he is. And it jeopardizes their working relationship before it had even really begun. Anger and resentment causes suffering. We know this. But what we sometimes forget is that that same anger and resentment that we harbor inside us causes unintentional suffering to those around us. Sometimes it happens in ways that are even more painful than the original harm that we experienced ourselves. In a statement attributed to the Buddha that you heard in the story for all ages, anger is like a hot coal that we grasp with the intention of throwing at someone else. I mean, can you imagine picking up a solid rock that is glowing? It is so hot, it glows orange, and holding it with your hand, and your entire body is conspiring to get you to get rid of that rock that you are holding against all biological imperative in your hand. You're holding this rock. So your body responds by getting other parts of it to respond. Clearly, the hand that you're holding the anger in is not responding. So you're flailing around with this coal in your hand that is burning a hole through it. And you're husband and wife shows up in the same space, and as you're flailing, whack, your children show up, and as you're flailing, whack, your friends, your colleagues, and your neighbors show up, and because you are holding on to this against all reason, whack, whack, your better self shows up, and whack, all of this because you are holding on to that coal of anger that is so hot it glows yellow. You're not meant to hold on to anything like that. Many of us are holding on to those hot rocks because of our insistence on being right. But being right is not good enough. It's a happy coincidence that next Sunday, one of our leaders here, Sam Gugino, is also offering a sermon and service around the theme of forgiveness. And when such happy coincidences happen, I just can't help but hear in my mind this refrain that comes from another movie, the film adaptation of Alice Walker's The Color Purple. There's a scene in that movie that takes place in a church and where the members of the church are singing, God's trying to tell you something. God is trying to tell you something. Maybe God is trying to tell you something right now. Right now. Maybe there is something for us to hear. Because forgiveness is countercultural, it's even subversive. In our society, we want to talk about what is right and who is wrong. And we want to be right because it feels good. It's treated like an accomplishment. Who doesn't want to be accomplished here? It speaks to the fact that those who are right are perhaps better, more worthy, more intelligent, healthier, maybe even more good-looking than those who are wrong and by default have to, I guess, wallow in the filth of their perpetual wrongness, like some kind of pig, but worse. And there are many that would use their right answers to take them down a path of destructive consequences. I understand that desire to hold on to hot coals and to throw those rocks that are so hot they glow yellow, especially at an enemy, especially at someone who's a proven threat. My parents, bless their hearts, as we sometimes say in Maryland. And one of my earliest memories of their teachings to me said this, that if someone hits you, you hit them back. And the unforgiving urban environment that I grew up in, both in New York and Massachusetts, often demanded that kind of approach as a matter of course, as a matter of survival. So I don't fault them, even though that is probably not the lesson that I would teach to my own children today. But we all learn that lesson. If not from our parents, we learn it from the hardwired reptilian brain that lives in here. We learn it from our government that insists on acting in violent ways overseas on our behalf. I also know the impact of flailing bodies trying to cope with the heat of the burning coals. I know the unintentional harm that those bodies cause to bystanders who are perhaps in the right house at the wrong moment. I'm a survivor of such moments. Being forgiving does not mean being a punching bag in the physical or the emotional sense. Far too often, women and children are told to stick around, to stick it out, to ignore it. It'll make you stronger. But forgiveness is not about that, not by any definition. It's about fully embracing who you are, your inherent worth, your dignity. It's about your ability to be vulnerable, which is a strength. It's about celebrating your will to survive. I want for all of us to stop the pattern of hurt and pain. Because this faith tradition, if nothing else, calls us to and empowers us to do just that, to disrupt the patterns in our lives and the lives of those around us. So let's start by recognizing where those lingering resentments and those angers live in us, in our own bodies. What does that anger, what does that resentment feel like in our chest, in our belly, at the back of our neck, at the top of our head? What does it feel like in the palm of our hand? And let's not only realize where it hurts and how it hurts, let's begin to pray for those who offended us. Let's start by calling to mind their image, and let us shower them with peace and compassion. Let us wish for them well-being as a sign of our own well-being. It is not enough to congratulate ourselves for being on the right path and still holding feelings of ill will toward others. So I encourage us to begin today to create the families, to create the culture, to create the society that we dream of. It is not enough to be right. It is not enough to be justified. It is not enough to have the laws of this country supporting your position. It is not enough to win the argument. It is worth so much more to be in relationship when relationship is possible, to recognize the humanity of others as well as your own humanity. The French philosopher Jean Vanier, in his essay Forgiveness and Celebration, wrote that to forgive is to understand the cry behind the behavior. People are saying something through their anger and or their antisocial behavior. Perhaps they are feeling rejected. Perhaps they feel as if no one is listening to them. Or maybe they are incapable of expressing what it is that's inside of them. Whatever the case, forgiveness starts when we recognize the ways that we all fall short of perfection. We all have unspoken needs that work behind our actions. In the case of Philomena, I'm not sure if reconciliation was possible or even desirable. It takes truth. It takes vulnerability on the part of all parties. And the nuns, at least how they were portrayed in the film, and I understand that there was some license, some artistic license that was used in the film, but at least how they were portrayed there, those nuns were not ready to admit any kind of vulnerability. They were not prepared to admit making any kind of mistake, no matter how unintended. They weren't ready to be human. Yet when we recognize that even our right answers fall short of perfection, we unlock that human spaciousness I spoke of in the beginning that lends itself so well to forgiveness. That spaciousness and awareness was at work in the heart of Philomena as she looked into the eyes of the people who made a career of deceiving her and said, "Sister Hildegard, I forgive you." We see that spaciousness, that humanity at work when she looked at Martin and she said, "I don't want to hate." This is very hard work, and it is the work that we have before us today. And lastly, there's another thing for us to remember, and it's something that has come down to us through the ages. And we find it in many places, but one place that we find it is here, where we are reminded that we must love our enemies. We must do good to those who hate us. We must bless those who curse us. And we must pray for those who abuse us. May it be so, and amen.